There. Now can you hear me? Yes. Hi. I'm Checo and I'm powerless over nicotine. Well, with that introduction, I'll try to stay somewhat humble, but yes, I have been involved with Nicotine Anonymous since my first meeting in January of 1989. My last use of nicotine was September of 1989, and I have stayed clean and free of nicotine ever since. I have attended meetings, either one or more, most every week since then. I have helped start new meetings and so forth. Went to my first conference in 1994. Went to my second conference in 95 in Colorado, where I brought ideas about slogans and thought that would be good to have. And I was asked to be literature coordinator. And although I would have liked to say no, because that was kind of scary, I said, okay, I would do that. And so year after year, ever since, boards have kept me in that position since 1995, that I've been either writing and creating new literature, revising, making proposals, updating literature in one way or another. During that time, I've also been an email servant, which has enabled me to interact with people all over the world as members, which one of the things I do with that is make contacts with members that are willing to do translations. So one of my other hats is sort of translations coordinator. And as many of you may know, we have various pieces of our literature posted on our website in 16 different languages. I am currently been working with someone and we've done all 16 pamphlets in French, as well as the extended version of our traditions. We have all our pamphlets and our book translated into Spanish. And 8 of those pamphlets are as hard copies and formatted and available at our store. And any day now, maybe this coming week, we are going to be publishing El Libro, the book, in Spanish, using an on-demand publishing. That means that the Spanish version of the book will be available to book retailers to post on their websites, whether that's Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or whatever, and people can place their order. And it gets printed on demand. One of the advantages of this that I've discovered is it doesn't cost World Service anything ahead of time. It's just a matter of getting it out there. When people order it, that's when it gets printed by a printing service and gets shipped and delivered. So those are some of the things that I've been working on. I also try to interact as best I can with our international members and different groups around the world. This is what I've been doing over the years, and it's been my privilege to serve this fellowship, which I am ever so grateful for saving and changing my life in so many ways. I've worked on the study work, probably something I feel particularly good about, because that was something I wanted to see happen for years, and a lot of times it was talked about having a committee do it. And meanwhile, I was working on different pamphlets through the years, but that was kind of intimidating. But in the end, I decided a few years back to just start to put something together and bring it to a conference, and at least it would be something to get started on. Well, as it turned out, people liked pretty much what I had, and that's become our step study workbook, because I've always felt that when we say work the steps, and so many people would say, newcomers, well, what does that mean? How do you do that? Although there may be other ways to work the steps, having a workbook seemed a good concrete thing for people to do and work with their sponsors on. And I've gotten lots of good feedback from that, as well as many of the other pamphlets that I've created over the years. So that said, I've been busy. And now I'm currently the chairperson emeritus. And all those things, I would like to say, at first intimidated and kind of scared me, but the calling to do service has overridden my anxieties and fears about whether I could handle doing all that. And in part because this is a WE program and I know I have support. I know that it isn't entirely up to me, that if I do something that's inappropriate or not correct, there are people to reach out to. And I'm glad of that. One of my other projects upcoming, I guess I would put a pitch out there for people to consider writing stories about being a sponsor or a sponsee, submitting them to the email address for being literature coordinator. And all the contact information is on our website under the tab Contact. And mine is there as literature coordinator to submit things, as well as daily meditations. And they can also be submitted. I'm hoping that we will get a second book of daily meditations. I've written a whole bunch towards getting 365, as some other members have. So hopefully that will come about. So today, or tonight, I was asked to talk about revisions being proposed for our promises, knowing how well that the promises are, like much of our literature, is very dear to everyone. And I'll give you a little history behind where these proposals came from. At one of my local meetings, when we read the promises one night, a couple of years ago, she shared that one of the most important promises that's happened in her life was that her relationship with other people and with her higher power had improved, and that was really important to her, and felt like that should be in the promises as well. So that started a discussion in my local groups and with other people about other things and ways to look at our promises and to see what kind of suggestions would come about. During the last, about 2 years ago, I brought one version to a workshop of some proposals, and the workshop liked them. But when we brought it to the General Assembly, the General Delegates, there was concern that it was happening too fast, and they wanted to go back and talk to their members about it. And so that's how that was left. However, during the time after that, I did not receive much of any feedback. Maybe a couple of people wrote in and submitted their ideas, concerns, or whatever. And so about a year ago, I started discussions with the three local that I attend. And in one group in particular, we started just devoting the meeting hour to discussions of potential proposals for our promises. So, with that said, I would, unless anybody wants to comment on anything I've said so far before I go directly into the promises, I will turn it over for a moment if anybody wants to speak. Okay, I don't see anybody wants to. As I said, this is my first time of doing this, and I know that Chick and Lydia are there to help me with this. So, Lydia or Chick, are you going to put the material with the comments, or what are you going to put on there? I'm looks like you've put on there as they exist now, right? No, I guess no, you have, but I don't see the comments on the side, so I guess I will do that. I'm going to read through the proposed document for it, and then I will go back a paragraph at a time, and at each paragraph, I will ask for any questions, concerns, or any discussion on each paragraph. Okay, I will proceed. On our path to freedom, joy, and serenity, we are guided by the 12 steps of Nicotine Anonymous, which allow us to successfully steer the treacherous curves of craving, emotionality, turmoil, and unmanageability. Our spiritual life is not a theory. We live it. Physical improvement for many of us is almost immediate. Our sense of smell and taste returns. The world takes on a new dimension of color and clarity. We no longer have to answer the craving call every 20 minutes. Our self-esteem is fueled by the generalization that a power greater than ourselves has pulled us from the muck of denial. We acknowledge the harm our addiction did to ourselves and others. We ask for and accept the help this program offers to reduce our risk of becoming one of the millions of premature nicotine-related deaths each year. As the numbness lifts, we begin to feel again, sometimes to the temporary peril of those around us. We learn to assert ourselves where previously we've been aggressive or passive. We find hope and courage as we begin to love and care for ourselves. By practicing program principles, our relationships with others and our higher power improve. Gradually, our interest is focusing on Nicotine Anonymous rather than nicotine. We begin to forget we have been nicotine users, except at meetings. We give back to others the support we have been given. Service is our gratitude in action. We now realize we had been participating in a grand hoax. We haven't given up anything at all. Healthier living becomes a joyful experience. We are humbly grateful for the gifts we receive as a result of our recovery. Our higher power, through this program, has done for us what we could not do for ourselves. So now I will go back and take a paragraph at a time. I don't suppose what I'm seeing on the screen, Lydia, can be divided up into either paragraphs or sentences to separate them out. Otherwise, it would have been that way. So, in the first paragraph, that starts with our path to freedom and ends with our spiritual life is not a theory, we live it. The group discussed that and decided we prefer to delete the words have to in where it says our spiritual life is not a theory, we have to live it. And that was in part because it seemed like the words have to was commanding people to do something, and it was not even a step three decision of one's own understanding. And since it states that our spiritual life is not a theory, we accept it as a reality. And so it was decided to simply let it be, we live it. It's not a theory, we live it. So at this point, if there's anybody who wants to ask questions or concerns or comments, please raise your hand.
Take the mic, Amy.
Hi, Amy, nicotine addict. I like it. I agree with what Carlene put, simple. And instead of have to, I really think I like the first one. And yeah, that's it. I just kind of like that. Never thought about it really, but I like it.
Okay, anyone else?
Chick here. Grateful recovering nicotine addict. You know, Checo, you talked about this, and I could never get it. This is the only way I could get it. And I'm telling you, by doing it this way, so much more sense. I mean, I read it before, and I couldn't get it. But just really putting it simply on the screen like this makes all the difference in the world. And yeah, I can understand the changes in that first paragraph. Thanks for your work.
You're welcome. Anyone else?
Okay, there you go. Can you hear me? Okay, good. I'm new. This is my, I think it's fifth meeting, and I've just kind of worked around, and I haven't gotten my books yet and things like that. They should be here tomorrow, hope. But I have been reading what I can run across and what I've learned from today that I can check out. And one of the things I've heard read so many times are the promises, and it's different when you actually can see them in writing, and, you know, for me anyway, because I haven't really gotten that accustomed to them. But from every single time I've listened to it, as well as read that first paragraph, for me, it really, something just kind of made me rebel when it, that last part of the sentence, we have to live it. Was just so stressful for some weird reason. That just made me just think, oh gosh, what if I can't then? Okay, if we have to. Instead of, you know, we really don't have a choice. We are living. And if we are working this, we're going to live it. So I really like it. It's a minor change, but it does make a big difference as far as for me. And I thank a lot for all this work that you're doing with all the literature. Thanks.
Thank you. Yes, one of the, I would say that in our traditions, in the introduction or in the first tradition of the extended versions, it talks about how there are no musts, M-U-S-T, in this program, and that no one can tell somebody else what they must do. So not everyone takes have to in the same way, of course, but there certainly have been people who have taken it as if someone's telling you, you must do that. At the conference, there were some in that discussion that I recall that said, well, they felt they had to live it. And my feeling about that is, yes, a person, individual, can make that choice or can have that feeling that they have to. My perspective on world service literature is that world service is not in a position to tell members what they have to do. And at one point, I had suggested having it say, we choose to live it. But the group said that we worked with said, well, neither way, and just simply have it. We live it because if it's not a theory, we live it. And we kind of avoid some of that controversy. But I guess I also wanted to make the point that when I'm doing literature, I'm doing it as a perspective of it's coming from world service to the members. And therefore, in this case, we shouldn't be telling members what they have to do. And the other thing, I don't know if it'll apply to this piece of literature in particular, but I'm always trying to stay mindful that we are a worldwide fellowship. And there are many cultures and many different perspectives. And to me, the most important thing is how we welcome people. It was essential to me when I walked into my first meeting, still smoking, that I received acceptance and a welcome. And that is something I've tried to have in my meetings that I attend ever since to make sure that that's important. And also when I'm doing literature, is how can I make it as open and welcoming to people in the world. That's not always possible, but as I work on translations, sometimes that opens my mind to different cultures in a way and the words used. So it's tricky. And so sometimes, like with this sentence, keeping it simple with just saying we live it, just seem to work. So is there any further discussion on that paragraph? If not, I will move on to the next one. I'll turn it over to see if there's other comments. Okay, I guess I'm not seeing another comment, so I'm going to move on to the next section, which is physical improvement for many of us is almost immediate. Our sense of smell and taste returns. The world takes on a new dimension of color and clarity. Basically, that's what the next sentence is, and it's not showing it on the screen, but if you were to see the way it actually looked and the way we're proposing it, that would be as a separate sort of paragraph or sentence and not part of an ongoing paragraph. I wish we could see that on the screen, but one of the things the group was saying that instead of having it set up the way it currently is in five, I guess, paragraphs, was sort of setting each related promise by itself to set it off. So not exactly it's a list, but instead of putting it in a paragraph, they preferred it, I guess you could say, more in, as a list or as separate promises to accent each one. So that second, I'll call them paragraphs, is physical improvement for many of us is almost immediate, and our sense of smell and taste returns. The world takes on a new dimension of color and clarity. There is no change to the wording of that. And there's no, the only change next that comes, we no longer have to answer the craving call every 20 minutes. That is the same wording. It's just that it's being relocated from further into the text as it is now and moving it into the third position. And the comment about that is that we move the craving call here to follow the immediate physical improvement and before self-esteem being fueled and denial pulled. But there was some discussion about having that sentence before the sections we ask for and accept the help, or even before as the numbness lifts. So that's just a sentence, not sure, but for the moment, the proposal is to have it in the third position to follow the physical improvement for many of us. It's almost immediate. Our sense of smell and taste returns. The world takes on a new dimension of color and clarity. We no longer have to answer the craving call every 20 minutes. So that it kind of follows right after that immediate change of physical improvement is due to the fact that the craving call, we're not answering it every 20 minutes. Then we transition into the next promise is about our self-esteem, which remains the same sentence, is fueled by the genuine realization that a power greater than ourselves has pulled us from the muck of denial. And in the current one, it has that is followed by where we have been ever so slowly killing ourselves. Because death is going to be mentioned in the next section, and there has been no mention about the damage that we do to ourselves and others, because the only consequence of using nicotine isn't death. It also has to do with damage to ourselves and to others. And currently, our promises, as they're written, doesn't really have that level of consequence. And so, therefore, the groups came up with it, inserting the sentence after the muck of denial to be acknowledge the harm our addiction did to ourselves and others. The group felt that that was really an important part of our experience, was to get out of the denial was to acknowledge the damage that we did to ourselves and others. So I will turn it over for any comments about that, as you guess you can read it on the screen, even if it's not formatted the same way we have it. I guess the slashes sort of indicate where there's a break. All right, go ahead. Anyone wants to comment so far?
Could you read that second paragraph again for us, how it's supposed to be, how you want it?
By the second paragraph, in the way I'm setting it up, it starts with physical improvement. Is that what you're asking me about, or are you asking me about the paragraph that starts with our self-esteem? Over.
I guess starting with physical improvement. I just would like to hear it all together.
Okay. That would be sort of the fourth section, and that altogether is our self-esteem is fueled by the generalization that a power greater than ourselves has pulled us from the muck of denial. We acknowledge the harm our addiction did to ourselves and others. Over for comments.
I'm Julie. I'm a blessed and grateful recovering nicotine addict in the middle of the herd where I belong. And thank you for your service in doing this section. I have to admit that I'm a little bit in shock. My understanding of what this hour was about was that the promises already had been revised, and what was the rationale behind that. And I almost choked on a late dinner seeing some of this. I'm like, oh, what? What? Don't you know those are the promises that I got sober on? I hated those darn things. I didn't think they could ever come true for me. I can see the rationale. And you're going to change them all now? No, no, no. I resist change. I resist change. Anyway, I can see the rationale behind the spiritual life. Our spiritual life is not a theory. We live it. I think that early in my quit, and at times now, whether you say we have to live it or you take the have to out and you say we live it, a part of me is still going to look at that at times and say, really, really, you really think I can do that? Like all the time, crazy, you really think I can't do that? And that's how I was at times early in my quit. I was like, our spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. And I would, you know, consciously or unconsciously, there was a part of me that was going, oh, then I'm so busted because I'm not living it. And I think it's something, for me anyway, and I hear other people talk about that growing into this stuff through the steps and through living one day at a time. So I think it's cool, though, if you say our spiritual life is not a theory, we live it. Me personally, a part of me is going to honestly bust myself out on that either way at times and did in the beginning. And the other thing that I want to say that's going to go over like a lead balloon, I'm sure, is where is it? Our self-esteem is fueled by the genuine realization that a power greater than ourselves has pulled us from the muck of denial where we have been ever so slowly killing ourselves. That is absolutely one of my, maybe the, or one of the top, one of my top favorite parts of the promises, that one line, and I grew to love reading it. It took me so long to realize that I was in the muck of denial. I was slowly killing myself. Someone was sharing earlier in one of the meetings about someone they knew in real life who is now weeks away from dying, and it wasn't that long ago that anyway, this has happened in general to tons of people, that they wanted another cigarette and wanted someone to buy some for them. And I feel that acknowledging the harm to both ourselves and others, it feels like you're taking me a step down. You're soft pedaling it. You're whitewashing it. You're intellectualizing it. And it's like, I know harming myself and others is something I also will find out through the steps and the questions in the step study guide workbook and working the steps. And again, it's just my opinion. I always reserve the right to be wrong. I'm just being honest. I had a huge gut reaction to this. Like, please don't take away from me and another nicotine addict the part where we have been ever so slowly killing ourselves, because it's true. And our addiction wants to tell us that's not what's happening. And it says death is addressed in the next item. And it's like, where is it addressed in the next item? Maybe I missed that. Don't take death out of that, out of this, because that's what it is. It's slow death. It's legal. I paid for it. I took out a contract with the tobacco companies on my own life, and I paid for it slowly. And my actual disease told me that wasn't true. That wasn't what I was doing, or I would escape the consequences, you know, that others had gotten. And I know it's not only me that I harmed, but I love the blatant, raw, naked, truthful honesty of I was in the muck of denial, slowly killing myself. And I don't know if early in a quit, if I can even understand the harm to both myself and others. I mean, that's a lovely statement. Maybe that would be great somewhere else, I think. But when I'm talking about a power that was greater than me that I found here in this room to start when I felt beyond all hope, and it pulled me from that muck of denial where I was slowly killing myself, then I don't want to say soft things like we acknowledge. I mean, in other areas of life recovery, I like the word acknowledge. To me, it's like way too soft. Nope. Hit me with your best shot of the darn truth. Yep. Pulled from the muck of denial where I had been ever so slowly killing myself. And as I'm getting, you know, going along here nicotine-free, trying to learn how to live life on life's terms and chewing at the steps slowly, reading them, working on them, hearing them shared in meetings, yep, I find out, I answer questions, and I find out and I hear people share in meetings that I harmed other people too. It was a slow death, and I was doing it to myself in the arms of the nicotine. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Julie. I appreciate your passion and the power the words as they are now have mean to you, because I certainly believe in the power of words. I would like to say that in doing this process with the group and in my own mind, one of the things that was discussed about the promises was that these are, being that they are promises, these are the things to come in as we move through and work the steps. They may not be where we are today when we first come into a meeting, but these are the things to aim for. These are the things to hold out the hope for that we will get there. So that was in part the discussion around not only is that we wanted to, that we would eventually realize that never not we were harming ourselves and others, as long as the next section, which I guess you weren't reading, which is more the same as what's been there, is that I'll go to it now. We ask for and accept the help this program offers to help reduce our risk of becoming one of the millions of premature nicotine-related deaths each year. And the discussion in our group was, well, we are certainly covering the reality of death. And part of that discussion was also that so many members or people, maybe not so much members, but in the public, when you talk to someone who's smoking and, we talk about death, they say, well, everyone's got to die someday. And so they sort of, their denial almost dismisses it. And part of the rationale to mention the harm it does is to bring home the fact that you may not die instantly from this, that you may have harm now and you may experience harm and disease before you die. So that was another part of the discussion of it can be a process that you can get harm yourself and others. And you may die eventually. But anyhow, I guess all I would say is that the fact that it's in there, the reality, the very true fact that millions of people die. In fact, recently I was looking at the World Health Organization, and the May 2017 statistic is that 7 million people die from smoking-related diseases in the world every year. And of that 7 million, 900,000 are from secondhand smoke. So in part, the group discussion around this really felt that that was really important because it also relates to our relationships with others and making amends. So I'm just trying to give you back what was part of the group discussion around this. Proposal, and I'll turn it over for further comment. Anyone else want to comment on the text, proposed text, as we've gotten to so far before I move on to the next? Over. Thanks, Lydia. Yes, and, you know, this is just part of the ongoing discussion leading up to workshops at a conference. Nothing's a done deal at this point. I will say that at this local meeting, because change is so difficult, whether it's changing and letting go of nicotine or changing any behavior, we're human beings and change does not come easy to us. It's part of our biology, part of how our minds are wired. So therefore, at the local meeting, we recite these proposals, or this proposed version of our steps at our meeting, with the idea of getting familiar with them so that maybe we can get past just the fact that it's different and see what it feels like as we become more familiar with them, so that we can have maybe more insight into them, knowing that when anything is changed and different, it can be disturbing. It can seem like, wait a minute, that's not the way I've always done things. But our group's more or less attitude became, but isn't our recovery all about being honest, open, and willing, and having an open mind, and to see things and be willing to at least consider them and not just to reject things outright. So I just say that this whole process of working on this particular piece of our literature has been interesting just as a process in and of itself. So with that said, I'm going to move on unless there is further. Well, you can comment after I go to the next section just to keep things moving forward. Like I said, the next section was we ask for and accept. And to put the word to ask for and accept, that was added in accept because it's an important aspect of the health process, similar to asking for the serenity to accept. That to just say that we ask for or we choose to ask for the help this program offers, the group felt like it's important to acknowledge that we not only ask, but we accept the help. So the sentence is, as proposed, we ask for and accept the help this program offers to reduce our risk of becoming one of the millions of premature nicotine-related deaths each year. The group felt like they took out what relief, because they felt that it wasn't needed to say, since it was obvious about death. And I would imagine there'll be different opinions on whether to take that out or not, but that was what this group voted to say no. Majority said no, they prefer not having it in there. So I guess before I move on to the next section, any comments about the proposed sentence of we ask for and accept the help this program offers to reduce the risk of becoming one of the millions of premature nicotine-related deaths each year. Anybody want to raise their hand to comment on that further before I move on? Go ahead.
Very grateful, recovering nicotine addict, as usual. So, I like the beginning, and now it's going too fast for me. I always tell everyone I'm a slow learner. I may ask for help, but whether I'm going to accept it or not is another story. But I just wanted to, I really don't want to comment on this, but I do want to share a little bit of history of Bonner and me. And I was on the board when this was presented before. And I, at that point, was gung-ho, whatever's going to help change, yes, this is what they're suggesting, this is what we need to do, blah, blah, blah. I was just a cheerleader for everything that Nicotine Anonymous ever wanted to pursue. And then Kenny Mack brought these promises because he was the delegate at that time. And by the way, we will be voting for delegates in March. If anyone's going to New York to the conference and wants to have a vote, we could probably have 10 delegates because we have about that many meetings, or 7 delegates. I'm not quite sure what it is. But so Kenny was the only one going as a delegate that year. And so he brought promises to Vonar. And we had a 2-hour meeting on just these promises. I was like blown away because people were just adamant against it. And a lot of what's already been shared here today by one person, you know, this is what's helped me. This is the way I want to keep it, the resistance to change. And so I stuck there and I watched the process in Vonar. And boy, I grew up that night. I think I was chairperson of Vonar at the time. And I was like, I tried practicing not forcing my beliefs, you know, and it's a group decision. But my mouth was left open, you know. I was like, wow. I mean, person after person after person came up not wanting to change. And yeah, I am someone that believes in change to get better. So then we went to the World Service Conference, and the same thing happened at the World Service Conference. What I thought would easily slide through and get approved, the fellowship did not want. So I'm just saying that out loud so that everyone here understands that, you know, we have traditions, and it's through our group conscience that we decide things. And then these would never be approved unless the delegates, a majority of the delegates, would vote yes, let's change them. So if you have any strong feelings, please, either way, you know, because your thoughts could help people make a different decision. Just like doing it nice and slow, the first part I could get, I'm just someone that needs things repeated numerous times. So, I need to click on this whole thing together again and look at it. And anyway, we're not voting tonight. This is just being presented to us. And this will be presented to Vonar again before the conference, hopefully in the April group conscience meeting, or following the group conscience meeting. So this is just your first initiation to this, so that you can be educated and educate others on your beliefs. So thanks, Checo, again for doing this. And I think Julie has her hand up again.
Thanks, Chick. The conference that revisions for the promises were brought, maybe it was 2 years ago. At least all I can say is my memory of it, since I ran the workshop, is that the delegates in the workshop were agreeable to the changes, which are not exactly the ones here. This is what we're doing tonight is a piece that's evolved from that, and that the decision was made with the general delegates, although there were people who stood and said that they were concerned about changes or didn't want to change. The vote there was to postpone a vote on it so that people could go back to the groups and discuss it. It wasn't decided that, no, we're not going to change it. It was basically left that we need more discussion on it. That is my memory of what happened at the conference. And the other thing, I guess I would only say, I know the change can be challenging, and I would only ask people to try to stay open about it. Doesn't mean you have to agree with it, but just, I know I have to many times, particularly in this process as literature coordinator, in writing material, taking it to delegates, and going through a process with committees at times, that things that I have written get changed. And sometimes that's difficult for me, being the author, to let things go. And over the 22 years I've been doing this for World Service, hopefully I've gotten a little better about that. But it certainly has challenged me at times to turn it over to to write what gets written, to work with the committee and turn it over to that. The committee turns it over. It's a continual process of turning it over to powers greater than ourselves, which is eventually the delegates. So I will continue to keep an open mind in hearing what people have to say about these things. But as Chick said, ultimately, it's something that's going to be discussed at a workshop, and we'll see where we go from there. There may be a thing where certain things are acceptable and some things that aren't. And there may not be a final vote at a conference. It may come back to another year. I've experienced that before with some of the literature I've done in the past. So it's a process. I can only ask for people to try to turn it over and to keep an open mind and accept the fact that any change can sometimes just be difficult. Okay. That said, I'm going to move on to the next sentence, which is, as the numbness lifts, we begin to feel again, sometimes to the temporary peril of those around us. We learn to assert ourselves where previously we had been aggressive or passive. What's different about that is switching the order. In the existing pamphlet, it says we are learning to assert ourselves where previously we have been aggressive or passive. We are also beginning to love ourselves. As the numbness lifts, we are beginning to feel again, sometimes to the temporary peril of those around us. In the group, we felt that it's that the numbness lifts first, and then we learn to assert ourselves. And instead of saying we are learning, they felt to keep the voice consistent in what's the term I'm looking for? Well, it's not, instead of using learning, which is a passive form of the verb, to say we learn to feel again, to keep it in the active voice rather than the passive voice as far as that. But mainly the difference in that is to change the order by saying the first list, and then we learn to assert ourselves where previously we have been aggressive or passive. So I will turn it over to any comments about basically switching the order of those two sentences.
Julie, you have your hand?
I'm Julie. I'm blessed and grateful. Recovering nicotine in the middle of the herd where I belong. I didn't understand that, though, when I first came here. And for a long time, I didn't understand. And I'm fairly intelligent, but I'm, like, not very smart when it comes to nicotine addiction. And I'm grateful to everyone for the service for this tonight. I'm even grateful that it's stirring me up. I feel uncomfortable about that. Part of me is like, you know, you idiot, don't raise your hand and talk again. You already disagreed, like, really loudly. What, do you want to make a fool out of yourself in front of these people? And it's like, but the promises. And, yeah, I don't always get stirred up like that. I don't know where it's coming from, and I do acknowledge that I like to jokingly say that, but it's serious. I always reserve the right to be wrong, and I also want to say that I acknowledge that group conscience, you know, the voice of many makes decisions like this, not just my voice, but I do have a voice. I have a voice now of having experience, you know, from being on one side of addiction and getting help and getting on the other side of it. So I could be wrong about a lot of things, or I don't know. How do I know that what I'm sharing might not help some people, you know, who are going to help make this final decision, might help them feel more certain about the proposed changes? It's not guaranteed how what I say will affect anyone. So, you know, I bow to the power of group conscience. I acknowledge that, you know, I could be mistaken about this. I don't know why it's got me so stirred up. It sure as heck does. And I know part of it can be resistance to change. And maybe it's where I am in my recovery. And that's one of the things I wanted to say, is that, you know, a lot of times by the time people get to world, to the level of that level, world service, level of service, they've been around for a while. And they may, you know, have a broader view of things than someone who's earlier in their recovery from nicotine addiction, like me, or someone who's just, you know, starting to quit or within the first 90 days. And I acknowledge that, too. At the same time, I'm begging you, don't forget where you came from. Because one of the conundrums about this sweet freedom from nicotine addiction is that the better it gets and the longer you have the freedom, the more likely that you can be like I am now sometimes, and I only have like not quite 10 and a half months. That at times, just like it said in the promises, I'm not thinking about nicotine anymore. I'm not thinking about that I was an active nicotine addict. I'm still a nicotine addict, even though I'm in recovery. And I'm not even thinking about Vonar. Just in the moment, blessedly actually living my life. Ah, but the danger there is that I could forget. That's part of why I still keep coming back here. Because I don't think I've ever arrived or that I'm cured. And I think it's downright terrifying, you know, like more than most horror movies I've ever even seen or heard of, what this addiction does to people. And that they'll be like choking, dying in pain, and with their family around them, and still want a cigarette. So I feel like saying we acknowledge the harm and stuff that we, that's like soft pedaling what it's really about for me. And I guess I like the boldness of some of the language of the promises the way they are. And the what relief part, where, you know, where we have been, what relief? And it's like, yeah, you would think, why would you have to say that? And it says, where is it? I'm trying to find where it says. That's already implied that it would be a relief to avoid death. Okay, again, please don't take offense. This is not personally meant against anyone. It's just me expressing myself. Are you serious? It's already implied that there's a relief. It's obvious about death. You're talking to nicotine addicts. If you are a nicotine addict, like I am a nicotine addict, not obvious that it's a good thing and it could be a relief to avoid death. Or I wouldn't have smoked and used nicotine for decades. And I wouldn't have come here and had to read those darn promises and be mad at them, even as I was learning to do the beginning parts of service work, just doing a reading. I'm like, well, this sounds good. It looks like people do this. This is where you start. And they even thank you for it. Imagine that. I can read and they're thanking me. And I'd be reading these things, and as I'm reading them, I could feel myself rebelling, like, who are they kidding? That's not going to happen for me. But secretly, you know, I wanted it to. I wondered, could it? And so it's like, yeah, since obvious about death, please tell me what is obvious about death to an active nicotine addict. Not much. I heard in a meeting here, and actually, I hope that's not speaking out of turn, well, I heard someone else share, and they had heard it somewhere else, that, wow, that one day they got it, that they had been making attempts on their own lives 20 to 30 times a day, 24/7, every day. Woke up in the middle of the night, got to go to the bathroom, let's make an attempt on my life with a cancer stick. Yeah. There's nothing obvious about the death to a nicotine addict. Or it's there, and maybe I was afraid at one point, but... like, it just doesn't grab us. I had to be hit over the head with a lot of these readings over and over and over again and hear people share in different words the same things over and over and over again to begin to get my own powerlessness at a deeper level. So, like, and here's one other thing I love about that thing, what relief? I'm an addict, ladies and gentlemen. I am a drug addict. I want relief. This is part of what got me about that part of the promise. So I'm like, really? Relief? There's relief? Where do you get relief? Can I get it quick? I want it now. Give me relief. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Julie. Yeah, and I guess in all honesty, I would say that I was not in favor of taking what relief out of it, but part of my taking it over to the group and the committee I was with doing this, and I guess I should give you an idea of the different groups that I go to, let's say that how many have discussed it? 15 to 20 people whose time in the program ranges from a few months to myself of 29 years. So that in some ways, there's some variation of how much time they've put in there. But I had no problem. I like having what relief in there. And whatever happens eventually could certainly be that a workshop would say, yeah, they want to keep that in there. And I think your point is well taken, that we are looking for relief. I often share at my meetings that basically we're just human beings that want to feel better. And it seemed that nicotine did that for us. But as it says in our literature, but eventually it stopped working. So this will be an ongoing process, and I appreciate your point of view and your passion about that, and that, yeah, it can take quite some time to really hammer the realities home about various aspects of this addiction. Okay, so unless there's somebody else who wants to comment on that, I'd want to move on to the next thing, being that it's, you know, 10 to 8, and whatever, I don't know what time limit is on it, but just know that there's nothing final about this. This is just part of a discussion, and I would hope that now that, you know, Lydia's posted it for people to, if they decide to look at it some more during the coming months. And like I said, I can receive comments and input through my Nicotine Anonymous email address, which is literature coordinator at nicotine-anonymous.org. So the next sentence is, we find hope and courage as we begin to love and care for ourselves. By practicing program principles, our relationships with others and our higher power improve. So the idea was to move the love to follow in the learning process, and then add the promises of hope and courage that we receive, which supports the emotion of self-love, and add care as the action we take from that emotion. Recovery includes our actions. And basically, I'm reading the comment on the side, as you'll see in the document, when you go to see it with the different comments. And this section also takes in where this whole process about the promises started, as I said in the beginning, about adding in to our promises the important reality that our relationships with others and our higher power improve. Everybody in our group felt that that was, yes, a very important promise that has been coming true for them, that, and part of the spiritual awakening is realizing how we are connected to the world, whether it be to other people, to include nature, that it's about our connection, and that our disease is what kept us separate and isolated. For some, that was an attempt to find some safe haven and withdrawal from the world that we were having difficulty with, but that our spiritual awakening, as far as our group was discussing, was about connection and about our relationships, and that we are happy, joyous, and free, not sitting alone, but having positive, healthy relationships with people and our world. So that's some of the thoughts behind that section. I'll read it once again, and then I'll ask for any feedback. We find hope and courage as we begin to love and care for ourselves. By practicing program principles, our relationships with others and our higher power improve. I'll turn it over. Go ahead, anyone with any comments.
Hi, I'm Julie. I'm still blessed and grateful recovering nicotine addict in the middle of the herd where I belong. And I'm not sure I even totally understand this paragraph, but a couple of things have occurred to me. One is that before Nicotine Anonymous, I thought the serenity prayer was, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Then I found out there was this meeting called, I now call it the SPNU meeting, Serenity Prayer for Nicotine Users meeting. And boy, they had really extrapolated on that Serenity Prayer. And that was another thing that I didn't like at first either. I was like, discomfort, they call having a craving a discomfort. That is like the understatement of the year. And there are all these other things in there. But the love really grabbed me. It said the power we wanted was love. I might have given up on that whole prayer, and it means more to me all the time now. I still get stuff out of it now when I just couldn't really even focus on it in the beginning, early in a quit and stuff. And I think it's great that it's up there, and it's up there on the website. And now I'm starting to look at these revised promises. To me, one part of me is saying, like, you know, this is really overcomplicating something that was simple and beautiful and raw in places, just the way it was. Just like me when I first put down those ciggies, as Patty says. And another part of me is saying, but this is like a more in-depth explanation. It's like the rationale behind the changes, the proposed changes, are kind of like a wonderful explanation, more in-depth look at concepts and things that relate to this very program and the tools of it. But, like, I don't know if I agree that belongs right in the promises as they're read, you know, after every meeting, or just in the promises themselves, going and changing all this because of rationale. It's like, I don't know how much rationale. I wasn't very rational when I first quit using nicotine, okay? I wasn't rational at all, and most of the time. And the death thing too. I mean, it's enough that it says the steps are mentioned, program principles are mentioned. Actually, you know, you could be threatened by anything in the beginning of a quit. At least I could have. Anyway, I mean, keep it in the eye, Julie. I'm trying. And thinking about all my relationships and everything and the higher, it's like there are so many different ways that people come about this. And even though the rationale is good and it makes a lot of sense, that may not be the way a particular nicotine addict experiences it, you know, or in that order. Some of us have felt brain numbed off and on throughout, like, months and months, where we're like, wow, I'm in another kind of brain fog this month. It's happening to me at 1 o'clock in the afternoon often. Is it happening to you? Yeah, it's happening to me too. Or I feel clearer and sharper on some things, but I'm leaving doors open, or God knows what, which is, you know. And so I don't think everybody does wake up in exactly the same way, the same order. And, you know, and that can be related to so many things. You know, where are you going to put that rationale in? And you know, what paragraph could that change? But I said, actually, all the stuff that's written is valuable. It's like I wish it was somewhere I could access it and read it, kind of like the Serenity Prayer for nicotine users. And I think that you know, different people maybe could benefit from reading it and the rationale, or just how it's more of a, like, drawn-out explanation of what the promises are about and how they relate to, you know, the concepts and the principles of this program, the tools, and our own growth that's possible in recovery when we stop using nicotine to cope with life. And I want to end with saying that back on that death thing is just really, really, give it to me raw, okay? Because it took a long time and a lot of help and running away from here a lot to wake up. I couldn't have done it alone. I needed a lot of help. I needed to be hit over the head with it at times. Even just hearing people, the same people, different people, people with 5 minutes, 5 years, 5 days, people with no time still smoking. I needed to hear them all hit me over the head with a lot of this stuff before I could begin to wake up. And the last thing I want to say about nicotine addiction and death and a proposed change to the promises, hippie, I heard around here, someone I didn't even know who's long gone, hippie dude John. I heard around here, I did not hear that hippie dude John said, thank you for waking me up and helping me acknowledge my harm to self and other. I heard what hippie dude John said was, thank you for my life. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Julie. It reminds me of part of the discussion in the group was the range of our literature, whether for newcomers, the newcomers booklet, the newcomer and sponsorship pamphlet, serenity prayer pamphlet, that there is a range that is there for somewhat depending on how long and what your experience in our program is. And there was some feeling that our promises were things we aspired to and based, like our literature and our steps is based on the experience of those who have come before us. So there is somewhat of a feeling about the promises is that these are based on the experience of those who have come before us. And maybe that's more this particular literature, maybe these changes makes it a little more challenging for a newcomer or someone early on. It's certainly something for me to hear you and consider that. But to say that I know that in our discussions, there is the range of, it's not like there isn't other literature for people in the very beginning and raw. It's like there's the Fatal Attraction pamphlet that certainly can hit people over the head with a lot of reality. This is the facts about this addiction and the consequences of it. So I guess I just wanted to put that out there, and I'm not sure if I get a message from Lydia or Chick that we have to stop because there's the next thing, and whether I should just read through the rest, and everyone will have an opportunity to go to wherever Lydia is posting this document for people to see the proposed changes and revisions as they are now, along with the comments in the column to the right margin, and do that. So with that said, unless Lydia sends me a typed message that we have to stop immediately, I'll just read the rest of that and see what happens. So the last three sections is gradually our interest is focusing on nicotine anonymous rather than nicotine. We begin to forget we have been nicotine users except at meetings. No change there. We give back to others the support we have been given. Service is our gratitude in action. We now realize we have been participating in a grand hoax. We haven't given up anything at all. Healthier living becomes a joyful experience. We are humbly grateful for the gifts we receive as a result of our recovery. Our higher power through this program has done for us what we could not do for ourselves. So those last three sections, it was to add in a piece about service, about giving back, because we are making a change from being self-centered addicts to a grateful person who now actively serves others, because the spiritual goal and step 12 is to carry the message. And that is part of what we aspire to do in our recovery. The other thing is that health isn't necessarily a new experience for everyone, but as our slogan say, we want to live happy, joyous, and free. They felt like it was accurate to say healthier living becomes a joyful experience. That was some of the thoughts behind that. And that instead of just saying you're humbly grateful for this new health, there are many gifts. And to conclude our promises, they felt they wanted to have it be the gifts we receive as a result of our recovery. If they're more than just the recovery of better health, there are many gifts, which the promises have just been discussed, saying and listing in the above paragraphs. And with that, I will turn it over to anyone who wants to comment or to Lydia or Chick about our time limit. Go ahead, someone.
Hi,